Hello, and thanks for listening. I'm Jason Sparks. This is Sparking Spiritual Growth. Thanks for tuning in on the Gospel Radio Network. It shouldn't be such a surprise, but I am completely overwhelmed with the wisdom and how much depth there is in the Bible if we just pay attention. We're going through the book of Exodus, and the more I study this, I'm just falling in love with it more and more. For me, it was great stories. It was great. I mean, I'm not saying that they were fake stories. They're great accounts of things that happened in the past are very important, laying the foundation for the people of Israel, because this is where they started, right? This is them leaving the Egyptian captivity and establishing their own nation, and that was all at the hand of Moses as their leader. Great stuff. But the more I think about it and I try to make sense of it and try to make application for today, the more amazing it is. There's so many things here. There's so many principles of leadership. There's so many principles related to politics and even leadership in the church. I hope that you can get a lot out of this as we go through it. We're going to see in chapters 5 and 6, there's three main points that we're going to cover. The first one is that we see Pharaoh, who is trapped by his own decisions. And there's a lot here. And it's amazing to see that. You know, the book of Proverbs says that it says that people will dig, if they dig a hole, they'll be the ones who fall in it. That God has a way of causing us to get it caught up in our own nets and our own traps. And sometimes those traps are laid and we don't even realize that we're laying the traps. It's God who's laying the trap, or he's allowing it to be laid. I don't know how it all works, but I do know that God can do things in accordance with his will, and he can work alongside our wills, and he knows exactly what we're going to do, and he can bring about his purposes regardless of whether or not we believe in him, regardless of whether or not we believe in him or we choose to obey him. He can still make it happen. It's absolutely amazing to think that God can do that. But the first part is how Pharaoh gets trapped by his own decisions, and we'll see that quite a bit. Then the second part, we're going to see lessons about followership. I mean, there's some great lessons about leadership, but there's also lessons for people that are followers. And of course, there's no good leader without followers, right? I mean, if you look behind you, someone said, if you're a leader and you look behind you, and there's no one walking behind you, following you, you're not a leader. So we need to understand, if we're going to go a place and we're going to depend on the leaders that God provides for us, and we're going to follow those people so that we can get to a place, then we're going to have some lessons. There's some good things going on here in this chapter, in these two chapters, some good lessons for us. It was actually some bad things that were happening, but we can learn some good things about it. This applies to community leaders. It applies even to our federal government, however you want to see it. But it also applies to the church and how Christians should respond to the leadership that is there. And then the third part of this is playing the blame game. And this really is, I mean, the second part is about the blame game as well. This is when the followers were starting to blame Moses. And they were blaming the wrong person. But this third part is about Moses, the leader, playing the blame game as well. And the tendency that we have, if we're in a leadership position, we might start to blame people for problems that we're facing. And we need to be very careful of that. We need to put the blame where it belongs. And that usually means it's on us, right? If we're leaders, there's a lot of truth to the fact that, you know, the buck stops here. There has to be some accountability. But often we blame. Now, if we get into the habit of blaming, there are a lot of problems that are going to come by that. So that's what we're going to look at today. And so these three parts will really help us, I think, make sense of these two chapters, Exodus chapters 5 and 6. I want to encourage you to read those chapters when you get the chance, because it'll make a lot more sense as you go through this. And I'm trying to explain it in a way that, because if you're listening to a podcast, you may not have the ability to have a Bible right there in front of you, and that's perfectly fine. I'm trying to explain it in a way that you would be able to get it anyway, but I know that it'll make a little bit more sense as you go through it, if you'll just go ahead and read that and maybe come and listen to it again. But let's talk and get into the first part of this where Pharaoh is trapped by his own decisions. Now, we've noticed in lessons previous about the nature of government, foundational issues about the establishment of a nation. You know, God is establishing his own nation, and he's doing it the right way. So if you want to see an example of the right way to start a government, this is it. Or God is revealing that as he goes through this book. And God did that, and he showed how to do it. It's not about might. It's not about tanks and weapons and bombs like we think. You know, we in America, we pride ourselves on having the greatest military. And some people say we have the greatest military in the history of the world. I don't know. It's very likely that that's the case. But that's not what makes America great. If we are a great nation, it's only going to be because of other things, not because of tanks and bombs and things like that. Now, it might make us scary. Those things might make us oppressive, but they don't make us a great nation. And it's all about righteousness. It's all about following God. And that's going to be seen as we go through the book. But it's important to recognize that. And God is showing that even here, even in these first few chapters, that it should be based upon righteousness and goodness. And that's one of the problems with government. Within each government are imperfections. And the reason for the imperfections is not necessarily the theory behind the government, but it's because of the people who are in it. And that's the downfall of every nation. Those imperfections become a seed that grow into the destruction of nations, and eventually every nation will fall. There's not a nation that will exist forever except for the kingdom of Christ. And the reason for that is because that seed that grows is not based upon imperfections. It's actually based upon God's word, which is perfect and lives forever. So that's the difference between what God has established in his kingdom, the church, and what humans have established. And I sometimes run into people who say, well, I wonder what Jesus would do in a certain situation right now in the government. My response is he wouldn't be in the government. Now, I'm not saying that governments are wrong. They have a necessary purpose. But when Jesus came, if you remember that in the book of John, they wanted to take him by force and make him a king, and he escaped. He didn't want anything to do with that. He does not want to be an earthly kingdom because those things will fall eventually. But what Jesus established is far better. Well, coming back to Exodus, in chapters 1 and 2, we see the background for the conflict between Pharaoh and God. There was fear. Pharaoh had, he was new to being a Pharaoh, and he didn't recognize Joseph. It says that he didn't know him. We don't know if he had never heard of him or if he just didn't recognize him as someone who's significant, although the previous Pharaoh did. They loved Joseph. And they loved Israel. They gave them Goshen as their own land, and they had they were there as shepherds, and they were treated well. And this new Pharaoh came into power, and he didn't respect them at all. So we start to see political oppression because of the fear. He was afraid. Pharaoh was afraid that if they were attacked, if Egypt was attacked, then Israel would just turn on them. There's no reason for that, but you know, we talked about that. It could be something that he was just trying to gain political power. It could be paranoia. A lot of things could have become into that. But when he tried to oppress them, he did that. But taskmasters, and he's trying to really stop their growth, their numerical growth in the community. And so he put them to work. And that didn't work. So he started killing their children. And then in the midst of all that mayhem and death and oppression, it was very bad. Moses was born. And then we have Exodus chapters 3 and 4 where God shows his sovereignty. For example, in the burning bush account, we see his nature. And if you want to listen to the previous podcasts about that, I go into detail about how that works. We see the definition of freedom, how freedom is related to the nature of God. You know, when the founding fathers of America talked about how that we have freedom as an inalienable right from God, that was because it's based on the nature of who God is. Now, the thing is that when the founding fathers talked about freedom, it's a very different concept than a lot of people have today about what freedom is. So there are some differences. And if you listen to that episode, I'm sure you'll see some more insights into that. And then we also see how that God dealt with Moses' excuses. We all have excuses, and it's great to see what God said about those things. The point of those two chapters is that God's nature demands proper treatment of him and his word. Then we come to Exodus chapters 5 and 6, which we are today. Moses went to Pharaoh and asked that, or demanded, that Pharaoh let Israel go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and spend time there in worship to God. So at the very minimum, we're talking 7 days. It's probably going to be longer than that, but this is a 3-day journey, and he wants everyone to go. It'll be clarified later on when Moses is bringing in all these different plagues that he wants everyone. It's not just the men. It's not the men and the women. It's men, women, and children, and all the animals, everything. Pharaoh got angry. He said, no way. It's not going to happen. And in doing that, he called the people lazy and told them that they had to do more work. Listen to chapter 5, verses 5 through 9. It says, Pharaoh said, look, the people of the land are many now, and you make them rest from their labor. So the same day, Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people and their officers, saying, you shall no longer give the people straw to make brick as before. Let them go and gather straw for themselves, and you shall lay on them the quota of bricks which they made before. You shall not reduce it, for they are idle. Therefore they cry out, saying, let us go and sacrifice to our God. Let more work be laid on the men, that they may labor in it, and let them not regard false words. So this is his response. He says, I want you to do the same amount of work, but we're not going to give you all the supplies. You've got to go get the supplies yourself. Now, from the implications here, it was evidently they had a large supply either coming in, or they had a large supply that they had free use of, and Pharaoh says, no, you're cut off. Go find it yourself. Go into your fields and find it. Go to wherever you can and find it. And it says that they were starting to use stubble instead of straw. So what had already been cut down, they had to go back over it and just tear the stubble out of the ground because that's all they had. And so that was how that was part of the materials they needed to make the bricks. So there's the added pressure of finding more materials and keeping up with the same pace. Well, that's almost impossible. Now they realized they were in a lot of trouble. So of course they went, the children of Israel went to Pharaoh and asked that he would stop doing those kinds of things. And he told them, this is the reason you're doing it. It's because Moses is trying to get you to leave and you're lazy. So you need to get to work. That's when they realized they were in trouble, and they were in a lot of trouble because of that. So what happened after that was Israel started blaming Moses. They said, listen, this is all your fault. This is not the only time that they're going to blame Moses. I mean, they kind of blame Moses all throughout this book for any of their problems. But Israel started blaming Moses, and then Moses turned around and blamed God. But there's a whole lot here, as I've said before. First of all, we have the demand. Chapter 5, verses 1 through 4. Says, afterward, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, thus says the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness. And Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go. So they said, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go 3 days' journey into the desert and sacrifice to the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence and with a sword. So this is when he became angry. So the king of Egypt said to them, Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people from their work? Get back to your labor. So Pharaoh obviously responded in the wrong way. But this was a trap. The decision to respond in this way was already made long before Moses and Aaron ever approached Pharaoh. And that's because of the previous decisions that he had made. Sin leads to more sin. Think about why it is that he refused them. Fear. That's what it came down to. That's how the book began in chapter 1. All this oppression came because of Pharaoh's fear of people of Israel. And because of that, every decision he made from then on was based upon that fear. And the more he saw it failing, the more fear he had, the more oppression he tried to impose on the people of Israel. So he's motivated by fear. And that caused him to make decisions that would actually ultimately lead to his undoing. In chapter 1 in verse 8, it says, "Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph," as I said before. That's why he was afraid. You know, when your government feels threatened by you, you're in a very dangerous place. I think we can understand that. So he oppressed Israel by compelling them to labor. He put them in building projects and had them build cities and all kinds of things. And this was intended to suppress them, their growth. And they were a threat to him. But they weren't necessarily a threat to Egypt. And that's an important idea. He felt pressure. He felt fear. But they'd lived in Israel for a long time. Excuse me. They'd lived in Egypt for a long time. They were evidently peaceful people. They were shepherds. It could be that they had such numerical growth that it was causing problems. Maybe they were running out of land. I don't know. It's possible. And it could explain how it seemed to be easy to put them to work. Maybe they just needed something to do in order to feed themselves. And so Pharaoh said, "Hey, here's a great opportunity for me to put them in slaves or to enslave them." And when Moses came with demands, those things couldn't happen because these people are already oppressed. If he lets them leave, they're just going to walk away. They're going to leave and they're going to lose everything if they do that. Now, think about that. Remember, he even killed their children. Why wouldn't they just walk away? And if they didn't walk away, would they come back with more kids? Would the growth come that he was trying to suppress? It's very possible. But why would they ever come back? Now, think also about the economy. There's no way that you can have this many laborers. Some people suggest that when Israel left Egypt, there were between 1 to 3 million people. Now, we'll get into that as we come to it. But think about if you had 1 to 3 million, let's just go with a low number, a million, and let's suppose that 30% of that were men that were in the labor force. So it's 30% of a million.
We're looking at 300,000 men in the labor force.
How can that many laborers leave and the economy not suffer? So there's another fear. Now, he was going fear because these people could just rise up against me, but now he has another fear on top of that, and that is we've become dependent on these people as laborers. So what are we going to do if they leave? That's really one of the big things that are going on here, kind of behind the scenes, I think, that's really not stated. If you think about how it is that people in the United States, way back, how they supported slavery. It was almost every part of it based on the economy. What's going to happen if we lose all these workers and we have to pay them and they're working for free now, basically? That was part of the oppression. And it's no different, really, in the sense of the economy when we're looking at Egypt's control of Israel. Pharaoh was far too involved in this. He was too deep in this to allow anything like that to happen, to allow them to leave. And that was the point. See, God waited until the right time because he's going to show the world who he is. So the debate sometimes goes, did Pharaoh harden his own heart or did God harden Pharaoh's heart? And the answer is yes, both of those things. Pharaoh's decisions led him down a path that forced him to continue to doing the things. Now, he could have changed his mind, but he's putting himself in a lot more risk to change his mind about the way he treated Israel. He's putting himself into a lot of risk. It's a lot easier to continue on the way he's going. And then there's God who comes in and provides the catalyst for the hardening. It's like someone mentioned that if you consider take a lump of clay and a lump of butter and you stick them outside in the heat, on the road, the butter is going to melt and the clay is going to harden. They will always do that. Clay will always harden and butter will always melt if it's hot enough, right? God was the catalyst. He was the sunlight. He was the one that brought in the message that said, hey, we need to do something here. Things have to change. So we're going to go out into the wilderness. And that was the catalyst that he needed for Pharaoh's heart to begin to harden. And the hardening of his heart had everything to do with the decisions he had already been making. And those decisions were based on fear. Wow, it's amazing when you think about that. Think about how important it is that we make decisions that are not based on fear, right? I mean, make decisions that are based on faith. That's the only way that you're going to be able to ensure that you're doing what's right, doing the right things. Look at what God says, not what our fears say that's going to happen. Trust Him. And seriously, God may be doing the same thing to you if you're not careful. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 11 and 12. Listen to what Paul said. It said, "For this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie, that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness." So it's possible that we get caught up in unrighteousness and the things that we believe are pleasurable. It could be that we're chasing a dream. It could be that we're chasing something pleasurable. It could be that we're chasing something out of fear of what, like Pharaoh was doing, that we're pursuing a path because we're afraid of what's going to happen if we don't pursue that path. That could be part of that pleasure thing, but it's still based on unrighteousness. And God will allow you to believe a lie if your treasure is in unrighteousness, because they didn't believe the truth. They had pleasure in unrighteousness. Where is your pleasure? What is it that you treasure? We can see how Pharaoh, how his decisions almost guaranteed the reactions that he had. And now that he's at this point, it's going to take a lot to break that will. We'll see 10 different plagues that'll do it. But he didn't have to go through any of that. All he had to do is say yes. And as easy as that is to say, we can see by human nature, we can see that he was just so far in this path, there was very little chance of him doing that. But you're not too far gone, in theory. You're not. You can always come back. But are you setting yourself up for failure? What's your reactions to truth? Watch how you react to God's demands. Watch how you react to the situations in life. And make sure you respond appropriately. Don't respond to fear. Respond to faith. You will make the best decisions that way. And when I say respond to faith, I'm saying put your faith in what God says to do, no matter whether or not it seems like it's fearful. If you do right, you won't have any harm come. And you'll be, even if you face troubling times, you will overcome. Do you have any questions or comments? I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me, jason@sparksmore.com. Send me requests for future episodes if you want, questions, articles, whatever it is that you have. I'd love to hear from you. I appreciate you listening to this. In the next part of this, we're going to talk about followership. When leaders cause trouble, a godly response by followers. That's what this is about. Moses was raised up to help. There's no question about that. And he spent 80 years getting ready for this time when he's going to approach Pharaoh. 40 years he grew up in Egypt. And he spent 40 years in the wilderness. And now he's coming back and he's going to try to save his people. Because God told him to. And you remember that he didn't really want to go. God told him to go, and he kept giving excuse after excuse after excuse about why he wasn't going to go, or why he wasn't the right guy for the job. But God told him, "You're doing this." He was the right man for the job. But when he got there, the people actually tried to discourage him from doing what he's supposed to do. There are a lot of lessons here about following. We can read the response of Israel in chapter 5, verses 14 through 21. It says, "Also, the officers of the children of Israel, whom Pharaoh's taskmasters had set over them, were beaten and were asked, 'Why have you not fulfilled your task in making brick both yesterday and today as before?' The officers of the children of Israel came and cried out to Pharaoh, saying, 'Why are you dealing thus with your servants? There is no straw given to your servants. And they say to us, "Make brick." And indeed, your servants are beaten, but the fault is in your own people.' But he said, 'You're idle, idle. Therefore, you say, "Let us go and sacrifice to the Lord." Therefore, go now and work, for no straw shall be given you, and yet you shall deliver the quota of bricks. And the officers of the children of Israel saw that they were in trouble after it was said, "You shall not reduce any bricks from your daily quota." Then as they came out from Pharaoh, they met Moses and Aaron, who stood there to meet them. And they said to them, "Let the Lord look on you and judge, because you have made us abhorrent in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to kill us." And that's how they responded to Moses, who was trying to save them. They blamed the wrong person. Now, they blamed the right person in the previous verses, because they said in verse 16, "There's no straw given to your servants, and they say to us, 'Make brick,' and indeed your servants are beaten, but the fault is in your own people." But they took that fault, that blame, instead of putting it on Pharaoh, who should have been blamed for what he decided to do those things, they put it on Moses. They blamed the wrong person. We tend to do that, don't we? I mean, we blame the easiest person, right? We have a scapegoat. The easiest person to blame is the one who gets the blame. Think about how this relates to community leaders and how Christians should respond to them. When do you blame community leaders for failures? You blame them when it's their decisions that cause the problems, right? So they may make a decision that's bad, and they may decide that they're going to do something, and it just causes all kinds of trouble. It may cause all kinds of problems. And when that is the case, we need to go to them and say, "Hey, this is your fault, right? You need to fix this." But we also need to recognize that they shouldn't be blamed for every single thing that goes wrong, because sometimes they make decisions and they cause other people to do evil things because they have poor responses. A leader is not to be chastised or blamed for the decisions that other people make that are wrong decisions. Now, there is some level there of responsibility where those leaders should go to those people and try to get them to make better decisions, certainly. But no one is to blame for the decision that someone else makes to do something wrong. I've always had this idea in voting. Some politicians, they understand that they're servants of the people, and especially here in the United States, right? They're supposed to be our servants. There are other politicians who believe that they're our leaders. And in some ways, both of them are true. But here's something to remember. Some politicians would tell you exactly what they're going to do when they get into office. And when they do, you need to believe them. And don't be surprised that they do the things that they say they're going to do, especially if it's something that's done evil. I've seen people who voted for who I believe were evil people. And I've asked them about it. "Why did you vote for that person if he says he's going to do this?" And some of them actually responded by saying, "Well, politicians never do what they say they're going to do anyway." And they were surprised when this politician got in and did some bad things. Don't be surprised if they say they're going to do something wrong and they do it. But at least you know where they stand, so you can vote for them accordingly, right? And other politicians, you may have noticed this too. They say they're going to do things, and then they get in there and they do the exact opposite. You really have no idea who's going to keep their word or not, right? I mean, with politicians, yeah, I understand. We kind of generally say, well, none of them will keep their word. And there's some truth to that, but some of them try. Some of them do. There's a certain amount of trust for that person when we vote for him, right? Or her. I would much rather vote for a man or a woman hoping he does what he promised than to vote for someone and hope he doesn't do what he promised. You see what I'm saying? But we can't blame our government leaders, our government servants, if what they do gets a bad response because people react inappropriately. That's not that person's fault. They need to try to fix it, but it's not their fault. You think about this related to the church. Do you see any application? Good leaders will do what is best for others, even if it means taking a risk. And there are some risks that have to be taken. You know, there's none of us who are going to get out of this alive, right? There are risks for everything, and everything that is worth doing is worth risking for, right? If it's worth doing it, there, it's worth the risk to do it. And so Jesus says that we have to weigh the risks, right? We have to judge whether or not we're going to have what it takes to accomplish this. We need to be ready for face to face whatever it is that we're going to face. And we don't always know what the risks are, but we can at least have a pretty good idea sometimes. A good leader has to do what is best, even if they have to take a risk. They should be sound risks. I mean, they're not just willy-nilly, right? They're not just being irresponsible and saying, yeah, we're going to do something. They have no consideration for the risks or anything like this. You know, but here are some of the risks that are involved in leadership. You risk getting blamed for things that are going bad. Well, that's pretty obvious. You risk causing even more pain to the followers, right? So if you're leading someone and you make a decision and it doesn't turn out well, you're risking pain to other people. And that's the last thing you want. You risk putting people in danger. And sometimes there are really some tough decisions that have to be made. And we can't apologize for that, but we have to make decisions. But if people are willing to risk their lives for God, leading them through danger, it would be tough, but it's still appropriate. It's still good. And this is really the difference, as I see it, one of the main differences between a leader and a manager. A manager will not take risk. A leader will help people see the value of taking the risk and walking through the situation. It's a tough deal. And you have to make some very difficult decisions, but it's vital to make those kinds of decisions. That's what good leaders do. They have to do that. But also we need to recognize then, since we're talking about following, followers need to understand that leaders take risks. And it has to be that way. There's no other way. Because every good thing, there are always risks involved in doing it. We definitely see that with COVID, right? We've seen that for the last year or more. And, you know, I'm not going to get into a discussion where I'm making judgments about people or congregations, but we've had a lot of discussion about the risks of COVID and the risks of people getting infected and risks of this and risks of that. I have seen very, very little discussion of the risks of not being together, of the risks that we're taking in not spending time in worship the way God intended for us to do. Now, I know we've had some substitutes, and I'm not suggesting that that's always sinful, but we know that God wants His people together, and we also know that there are good things that happen when His people come together. At the congregation where I am, we sat out for about 6 weeks. We just did everything on Zoom when all this stuff first happened. You know, they said at first it was going to be for 2 weeks, and then it was 3 weeks, and then it was 4 weeks. And after about 6 weeks, we realized this is not going to go away. And we talked about it. And the consensus was, we're going to get together. It's not out of open rebellion. It's because we need each other. And there are some risks that we were willing to take. We're willing to risk getting infected because we believed spending time together was more important than that. And I can see that very easily. It took a little while for me to come around, but I can see it now. And I understand that. People in the first century, when they were facing persecution, they were putting each other at risk all the time. Now, that's the hardest argument that I've heard, the most difficult argument on my mind that people have presented to me about COVID is, well, you run the risk of getting other people sick. I agree, yes. But the first century church, when they came together, every time they came together, if they were in a time of persecution, they risked someone following them and telling the authorities where they were. It happened. So just walking into the assembly posed a risk to the people that were in there. Everyone in there could have died if the wrong person was followed. When you think of it that way, why would you ever meet? Because you're putting your brothers and sisters at risk, right? Because leadership is about assessing the risk and encouraging people to walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Sometimes that has to be done. I can't make decisions for other congregations. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not judging any other congregations. I'm simply talking about the fact that there are always risks. You know, after this is all settled down and everyone gets their shots and everybody's happy with COVID and we can open up everything 100% again and never have to worry about it. You know, we're looking for those dream days, right? Every time you have an assembly, you risk something. You risk people dying in car accidents. You risk people getting the flu and dying. You risk all kinds of things. And I'm not making light of the situation with COVID. I'm suggesting that we need to think through what it is that we're doing and whether or not the risks are appropriate for what we intend to do together. There are a lot of things that relate to that. That's an easy one to pick on. And so, you know, I may get a lot of emails about that. That's fine. We don't have to agree on that. Like I said, I'm not making judgments, but we had to come to a conclusion. One of the conclusions we had to come to, one of the understandings we had to come to, is that there is risk involved. Elders, in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 7, we are told about elders. Remember those who rule over you, who have spoken the word of God to you, whose faith follow, considering the outcome of their conduct. Now, I believe that's talking about more than elders, but it certainly includes elders. Acts chapter 20, verse 28. Therefore, take heed to yourselves and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to shepherd the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood. Notice what he says here. The Holy Spirit made them overseers. So God has put eldership into the church to be our overseers, to be our leaders. Hebrews 13:17 says, obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls as those who must give account. Let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you. Now, what happens sometimes is when we face situations of fear, we start blaming the wrong people. This is exactly what happened in the book of Exodus. They originally blamed Pharaoh and his servants, but ultimately they started blaming Moses because it was easier to blame Moses. Now, if leaders cause trouble, you need to take the time then to see who it is that's actually causing the trouble in reality, because they may not be the ones who are causing the trouble, but then again, they could be, right? I mean, some leaders will be bad leaders. If leaders are behaving ungodly, then obviously they're the cause of the trouble. And sometimes leaders perceive a problem and a solution that's not really there. Now, sometimes leaders, they behave inappropriately, they do things that just don't make sense. They just do things wrong because they're human beings. So in those cases, talk to them. And if that's the case, even if that means taking a few people with you after the initial effort, they deserve at least that much consideration. Go talk to them. Don't go behind their backs either. You know, don't start talking about them or secretly trying to change things. Now, that's not appropriate either. And speaking of elders, Paul wrote in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 20, he said, those who are sinning, speaking of elders, rebuke in the presence of all that the rest may also fear. So the elders, the leaders of the church, they have the right to be approached. They have the right for you as a follower to go to them and say, hey, I don't see what's going on here. I don't agree with this. Let's talk this out. They should be willing to talk to you too. That's part of what a leader does. But they're doing what's best for you. Okay, so you go and talk to them and you realize, hey, they haven't really acted inappropriately. They haven't done anything that is against what God says to do. Then you need to understand that there's other people to blame besides them. And in that case, like the case with Moses, he didn't do anything wrong. He did exactly what God told him to do. He can't be blamed for that. And he went to Pharaoh and he didn't tell Pharaoh, hey, let my people go and they'll never come back. He said, we're going to go and worship God and we'll come back. That was the implication. Now, Pharaoh read into that and he had great fears, but that wasn't Moses' fault. That was Pharaoh's fault. So if you find yourself in that kind of situation, your leaders are doing something and they started getting in trouble. They start causing problems, so to speak, and they're really just doing what they're supposed to do. You need to rally behind them. Show support, because I promise you that can be very discouraging to try to do what's right and then start getting blamed for doing what's right. That's not love. Support them. Think about how the Israelites responded to Pharaoh's immoral decision to make things even harder. It wasn't Moses' fault. Moses was trying to help. They could have gone a long time and never left enslavement at all if God had not raised up Moses, right? Why is it that we tend to think that God doesn't know what he's doing? I mean, Moses went and presented himself to the people of Israel and showed miracles and said, God is with me. And they believed it and they said, hey, great, we're going to get out of here. And then Moses went, and there's one problem that came up, and all of a sudden, now it's Moses' fault. They think that God doesn't know what he's doing. Why is that? Maybe it's because we don't always recognize when it's God who's doing it. Think about that. Sometimes we don't think God knows what he's doing because we don't actually recognize when it's God who is doing it. Moses proved himself. How easily they forgot. How easily we forget too. Fault was Pharaoh. He was the oppressor. He is the one who killed their children. He is the one who forced them to work and put taskmasters over them. He is the one who decided to make things even worse. Moses was bringing them to safety and freedom. And everything that is worthwhile has a cost. That's the way it's always been. That's the way it will always be. It seems like they thought that Moses would walk in, walk up to Pharaoh and said, "Let my people go." And he would say, "Sure, go ahead." There's no possible way that any sound-minded person would think that that would actually happen. But evidently, they thought it was going to happen. Now, your leaders may make decisions, and people may respond very badly. But here's a thing to take from this. Never judge a decision by the poor reactions other people choose to have about it. You judge a decision by the merit of the decision, not by how people respond to it. God is leading us to heaven, and there will be times that where he leads us is dangerous or risky. I know that's contrary to what a lot of people teach today, but Psalm 23, you know, one of the most popular psalms in the Bible, Psalm 23, verse 4, he wrote, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me." Now, that's a source of comfort, but I want you to notice, if God is leading us, and we find ourselves in the valley of the shadow of death, and God is there with us, that means he led us into that situation. Sometimes God will lead you through the valley of the shadow of death. You have to trust that he knows what he's doing. The point is not that God wants to put us in danger. The point is that God knows what he's doing when he gets us there, and he knows what's best for us. Trust him by trusting your leaders, as long as they're leading toward you, toward Jesus, and toward heaven. As Paul said, "Follow me as I follow Christ." Well, do you have any comments or questions? I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me at jason@sparksmore.com. That's the second part. The third part of this from Exodus chapters 5 and 6 is that leadership must avoid the blame game. Don't start blaming the wrong people. Now, this is going to speak into the leaders. And there's a couple of ideas here. The first one is that, you know, sometimes we can blame those people who are in our care. But listen, your level of leadership, your ability in leadership will be reflected in the people who follow you. If you're constantly having the same issues over and over again, maybe by the same person, maybe by many different people, that probably means that you need to improve your leadership skills. There's something lacking there. And if you improve your skills, you can help correct that. A good leader can't be responsible for the bad reactions of other people, yes, certainly. But a good leader will learn enough skills to help those people through those difficult times. So if you keep having the same issues and the same problems over and over and over again, that's an indication that there are skills that you need to learn. Don't start blaming them for your lack of ability. Do you see that? Be careful how you respond to complaining church members. I'm speaking to elders right now, or any church leaders. If you're in a leadership capacity, you're there to serve. Service is leadership. Leading is not dictating. It's not sitting down and telling everyone what to do. It's leading them, showing them, sure, certainly making decisions, but leading them through the valley of the shadow of death. If we make demands of people, those demands must be well thought out. They must be necessary. They must be done with proper timing, and done with an appeal to the end result, especially in the church. Remember, we're in a volunteer army. We can't force and coerce people. We have to lead them. We have to inspire them. We have to encourage them to do what we know they should do. And if they're Christians, they know what they should be doing too, and they need someone to help guide them and show them how to do it. So you serve by providing a framework. You're providing a support for your followers. You can't do everything for them, but you provide the tools and the structure that they need in order to accomplish the things that they do. And this is where a lot of times we get into a problem with leadership. Instead of looking at a congregation and blaming the members for not being where they should be, we as leaders must be willing to look at the congregation and say, what are they needing from me? What can I do to ensure that they are going in the right direction? What framework do they need? What support systems do they need? But a lot of times all we get caught up in thinking about is, how can I get people here at church on a regular basis? Sure, that's important, but church on a regular basis is not the same as personal development and growth in the kingdom. Those are very different issues. So the things that you do to get people to church are not the same things you're going to do to get people to grow spiritually. They may overlap, but there's a lot of other things that have to be done and considered. Give them the tools that they need instead of blaming them. Now, there's no blame going on from Moses to the people yet. He will. But it is something that's common. And I've seen it as a preacher. I've seen elders do this where they start looking at the congregation. I can't believe this is happening. This is happening. And this is happening. And I've been there too. I've looked at congregations that I can't believe. And I never stopped to think about what I was providing that was giving them a framework or support to get through that and to learn how to do differently. When you start thinking that way, you're starting to become a leader. Another thing about this, though, and this is what Moses did, we might start to blame God. Moses blamed God. In Exodus chapter 5, verses 22 and 23, it says, Moses returned to the Lord and said, Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it you have sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people. Neither have you delivered your people at all. Now notice how he, in blaming God, he even admits that it's not his fault. He said, for since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people. Why is he blaming God for what Pharaoh did? Because it's easier to blame God. It's easy to get discouraged. You start blaming God for things that he never did. He never said that that Moses would walk in and tell Pharaoh to let his people go, and Pharaoh would just say, sure, go ahead. In fact, he warned him. He told him in advance, I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart, and then you're going to see my glory. So he knew in advance, Moses knew in advance, it wasn't going to work the first time. But he was still disappointed. He was still discouraged. That's because he was a human. I've done this myself in the past. Went through some difficult times. At one point, I'd lost my job as a preacher. And I had to take something else that wasn't, I enjoyed it, but it wasn't preaching. And I so missed it. I spent 5 years doing television editing for a television program. And it was a good work. But I was really disappointed. And I felt defeated. I felt like I was useless, like I couldn't do what God wanted me to do because I just didn't have the skills, all kinds of things. Depression, man, some really tough times. And I was starting to have disappointments, starting to have difficulty in my relationships. And I'd been having some difficulties for a long time because I wasn't the person I needed to be. I started to blame preaching. I started to blame God for all of my problems. And that's a dangerous place to be. If you're going to blame God for your problems, the things that you do wrong, you're in a bad place. But I had to realize that my problems often came from my own sins and from my own lack of skills. And when, for example, I didn't handle stress and anxiety well. Anxiety was something that I didn't even realize I had. Looking back on it, it was pretty bad. Depression, same way. I would lash out at people sometimes, usually not people at church, usually my own family. And that caused a lot of harm. But God didn't force me to do those things. Preaching allowed me to have some of the stresses and strains that were kind of a catalyst, but it was not the act of preaching or the job of preaching that caused that, because I would have had that kind of response regardless of what kind of job I had. I don't know any job that doesn't have stress. It was me. God didn't force me to do those things. God didn't even want me to do those things. And preaching didn't want me to do those things. When I finally came to that realization, I started healing. I started dealing with a real problem. Don't blame God. It's a bad road. I've met people who blame God for years and years and decades. They didn't have a happy life, trust me. But Moses blamed God. I don't want you to blame God. What's the reason, though, that people play the blame game? For Moses, it was fear. Now, this is an important point about leadership, and I really want you to understand this. When God told Moses to go back to Pharaoh in Exodus chapter 6 and verse 11, Moses immediately responded with an excuse. He said in verse 12, "The children of Israel have not heeded me. How then shall Pharaoh heed me? For I am of uncircumcised lips." Now, he had gone to them, back to Pharaoh. God told him at the beginning of chapter 6 to go to the children of Israel and tell them, talk about the fact that God had made a promise. And he's trying to tell them that God is there to help them through this. So what a leader does when the people are blaming him for it, he doesn't just skulk, you know, go away and pout. He goes and talks to the people. And this is what God told Moses to do in the first 10 verses there. And when he does that, he goes to them and reminds them that God made promises and that God's going to fulfill those promises. And he's going to bring the people of Israel out of Egypt and give them that land that he had promised Abraham and to Isaac. And then they rejected him. It says in verse 9, "So Moses spoke thus to the children of Israel, but they did not heed Moses because of anguish of spirit and cruel bondage." They were at a breaking point. These people were defeated. And when he came to them, they'd already had enough. They're done. And so he went to, or God appeared to him and said, or the Lord spoke to him in verse 10 and said, "Go in and tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the children of Israel go out of this land. You're not giving up. You go back in there." Now, Moses told the people what they needed to hear, and hopefully that would, you know, it'll permeate them. They'll think about it. They're like, okay, yes, maybe it's not Moses' fault. Maybe it's not God's fault. Maybe we can have some little bit of hope here. So that's going to be working. That word from God is going to be working on those people. And then God says, you go to Pharaoh and you tell him right now, you go tell him, let my people go. And his excuse was, if the children of Israel didn't listen to me, how is Pharaoh going to listen to me? I'm uncircumcised lips. Now, he took the rebellion of Israel right there, the rejection of Israel, and the poor response of Pharaoh, and he blamed both of those on his lack of ability to speak well enough. That it doesn't make any sense at all, but that's what discouragement does. It causes you to act and think irrationally. His ability to speak had nothing to do with how Pharaoh responded. It had nothing to do with rebellion of Israel at that point. First of all, it was Aaron who was the one who spoke, not Moses. Aaron was his mouthpiece. But Moses interpreted Pharaoh's actions to be a direct result of Moses' own lack of ability. You can't fall into that trap if you're a leader. You can't fall into the trap to think that just because people respond inappropriately that you can't do it, that you have a lack of ability. First of all, there's no such thing as a skill that you can't learn. And second, if it's a skill. And secondly, their response really is nothing, has nothing to do with you. Now, you may need to manage their response. You may need to help lead them through their response, but their response is on them. They get to make that decision. Moses' decision or Moses' ability had nothing to do with Pharaoh's decisions. Those decisions that Pharaoh made, they were almost demanded by the previous decisions that he made that Moses had nothing to do with whatsoever. And Pharaoh was actually caught in a trap of his own design. He didn't realize the trap that he had been making, but God saw it. He had no idea that oppressing the people, that beginning of oppression of the people would cause so many problems in the future. It would cause him to oppress the people even more. But that's what was happening. So you can see there are a lot of great lessons about leadership and following our leaders and the reasons that we might blame the wrong people. Don't get caught in those traps, though. If we start blaming the wrong people, we're not going to follow the people that God sent to us. Be careful. Do you have any comments or questions? I would love to hear from you. I'd love to help. If you're having difficulties in these areas and you want to have some discussion, I can't give you all the answers. But if you need an ear to talk to, I can listen. And maybe we can pray together and talk about these things. If you're having difficulties with your leaders in your church and you want to have a discussion about it, I'm open. or you are a leader and you're trying to figure out, okay, what can I do to help the congregation? I'm open to discussion. I would love to help. I've got some experience in these things. And if you want to talk it out, let me know. You can send me an email at jason@sparksmore.com and I'll respond. I respond to everything, even if it's hate mail. I don't know if I'll actually email you back, but I will read it. Anything that you want to talk about or send to me, I appreciate it. And I appreciate you for listening. So come back again next week as we talk about Exodus, starting in chapter 7, and seeing more about what God is doing with Israel to redeem his people. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you later.